Good morning, everyone. I'm Asha Nayaswami. We're continuing our sheltering in place, although the phrase is getting a little old, isn't it? When we started this, I thought this was like some state of emergency that would be over in a very short period of time, and now it's become a way of life. I'm not sure if I said it on this broadcast or others, but in my own mind, I've decided I've joined a very unusual monastery, which has unique rules of its own, and I've made a life commitment to it. I think it's better to be in the moment rather than anticipating always that we're going to be rescued. That way we just relax, and if circumstances change, then of course we accept them. But in the meantime, better not to chafe against what's happening. So what shall we call these? Fireside chats. That's what we've been calling them. I think I'll just drop the shelter in place part and just say, hello, I'm Asha Nayaswami, and we're continuing our fireside chats. Of course, where I'm recording from is the middle of the summer. when Swami was in India, of course, which is a very hot country where a fireplace is hardly required, he actually, when he was remodeling this house he was living in, he was able to buy this, maybe there was already a hearth, I can't really exactly remember, but he got this little fake thing that had this colored paper. And you would sort of turn it on, and it would pretend to be a fire. So when it was 110, he'd go sit upside by the little hearth, and he would turn on the fire just to be like reminiscent of another reality. Just before he moved to India, in fact, yes, I think it was to take to India, if I'm not mistaken. He saw this beautiful painting of autumn colors, you know, the America, New England in America. Just beautiful fall leaves, and I think he bought the canvas and took it and just hung it on a wall. Now, this is the exact opposite of what I'm saying. I mean, what I was saying was just be where you are and just relax into it. But I think that was part of his way of enjoying it, was just to bring whatever was missing, we'll just bring it into this world and be at peace with it. So let's say a prayer and then we can start. Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, Friend, beloved God, Jesus Christ, Babaji Krishna, Lahiri Mahashaya, Swami Sri Yukteswar, beloved Master Paramahansa Yogananda, saints of all religions, dear friend and guide Swami Kriyananda, humbly we bow to you all. Bless us with your presence, that we may know that we are never alone, that even though we seem to walk through this world in a solitary way, you are always with us. We are always surrounded by guiding angels, and all we need to do is open our hearts to receive that ever-loving presence. Om, peace. Amen. Well, we've been going through the eight manifestations of God. Actually relates perfectly to what I was saying earlier before we prayed about just finding a way in the moment to feel that whatever you aspire to is not denied to you, but is accessible from wherever you are. I mean, that what when we are chafing against circumstances, we're always imagining that more of what I want would be available to me if my circumstances were different than they are. Of course, that puts us in this mindset where we are always anticipating a future. And the difficulty about the future is we can anticipate it, but when we get to it, it's not the future. When we get to it, it has exactly the same qualities that this present moment has, which is nothing is automatic. Whatever comes to us is the result of the inward consciousness that we have. We use that consciousness perhaps to influence events. And I'm not saying that no effort ever results in a culmination. I spent a long time writing a book, and eventually I was able to hold the book in my hand. And that was definitely different than the process of writing. And it was a deeply satisfying moment. But the whole time that I was trying to write it and failing, I was always anticipating holding it in my hand. And when I finally just sat down and did the writing instead of imagining the future result, that was when it actually began to work, because then I got into the present, and in the present is when you attune yourself to the infinite, because the infinite is always now. When Swami Kriyananda was a child, he was born with an exalted state of consciousness, even though he was just a happy little boy. But when he would fall asleep at night, he said, this bright light would appear right in front of him. He would gaze into that light until he merged into that light. And that's how he fell asleep. And because he was a child, he assumed that's how everyone fell asleep. He had no idea that that was unusual. And it went about the age of 9. He became ill. He had delirium from fever. He said when he started having delirium from fever, he became suspicious of any altered states of consciousness, is how he put it. He also began to realize that he wasn't like everyone else. And his father's world, which was quite different than his world, his father was a loving father, but just had a different, his father was, as he said, his father was a scientist who wanted to know the how of things, how do things work. And Swamiji said he was instinctively a philosopher, and what he wanted to know was the why. But he said he became very uneasy because he realized what a misfit he was on this planet. So from the age of 9 until he met Master at the age of 22, he tried desperately to get into this world in a real sense. After he met Master and was 22 and he learned Kriya Yoga, he started meditating, and this is how he put it, I went back into the same superconscious state I had entered so effortlessly as a child. And he said, and when I went into that state, it was the same moment, because in superconsciousness there is no time. Now, to me, those are just words, but they're fascinating words. You know, this, the unmoving center of the wheel goes out, and time itself is the rim of the wheel, and superconsciousness, our true self, is the unmoving center. Past, future, past, present, future are all equidistant from that center, and there's no difference in all of them. That's why it feels to us wherever we are, that's the only is there is. So the more we are in that moment, and this is what the eight manifestations of God are about. If our aspiration is God realization, and that's all I can talk about. I can talk about the things that we do on the way to God realization, but the premise of all my conversation is that God realization is the goal. And if you've been duped into watching this for some other reason, perhaps now is the time for you to go somewhere else. But anyway, that's what we're doing. So if God realization is the goal, and it is true that enlightenment seems to come upon us gradually because we believe in time, we experience it in time. That's how Master put it. But in any moment, it's not as if God gradually becomes more present. It's that we gradually realize that God was always present. And that's where the word realize comes from. We don't acquire it. We just suddenly realize it. Oh, I never realized that, but that's what it is. Isn't that exactly how you do it? Oh, I just realized, and that's what you mean. So when we talk about the eight manifestations, it's like in this moment, how can I be a channel for? How can I be aware of? And it's a magnificent answer to a multitude of dilemmas that the devotee encounters on the path from here to there, the appearance of here to there, from delusion into enlightenment. So the manifestation we're up to, which is number 6, love, joy, peace, calmness, wisdom, we've covered. So now we're up to number 6, which the actual word is power. That's the word that's used. I often use the word energy because it's a little easier to understand when we're talking about manifesting it ourselves. Energy, access to energy, which I'll talk about in a minute. But first I'll talk about the word power, because power is very important. Because we imagine that, but not that we imagine, because we understand that the closer we are to God, the more joy and love we have in our lives, the happier we are. The ego equates in its mind pleasure and ease with happiness. And in fact, if you analyze why we call something bad karma, it's because it takes away pleasure and ease. It requires fortitude. It requires tapasya. It requires perseverance. It requires sacrifice. So we call that bad because pleasure and ease have been taken away from us. So if we think about God being joy, the ego immediately thinks it's going to be pleasurable and easy. And sometimes quite coupled with that, because this is another delusion we all work with, that if I can just put out less energy, I'll be happier. Challenge is not pleasant. You know, perseverance is not pleasant. Strain is not pleasant. So we just think about, oh, I'm just going to relax into God. In the early years of Ananda Village, which was the only Ananda there was for the first 10 years or so, the Yuba River was a very popular destination, which was quite nearby the village, you know, 20-minute drive. And you could go swim in this beautiful water in these beautiful canyons. And many of the, I don't know what the word I would say, people whose attitude towards spirituality, often it was drug-induced, you know, you just ingest something by one form or another, you have a chemical alteration, and everything is pleasurable and easy. And so it becomes identified in some people's minds erroneously with spiritual life. So why should we strain? Let's just go swim in the river. It makes us happy. God wants us to be happy, so this must be what God is like. So that's where the word power comes in, because the power of God is it's in the river, but it's not in the just sort of splashing around in the water. I was in India, and there's a place called Deva Prayag, I think it's called, and it's on the way from wherever we were up to Badrinath. It's a very famous place. It's where two rivers, I wish I could tell you the name of them, but I can't remember, two extremely powerful rivers come together, and everything flows into the Ganges, but that's where it goes. I wish I could remember now. Incredibly forceful. And in America, where everyone's afraid of litigation, and we don't believe in karma, and we don't give people the right to choose, the whole place there would have been completely walled in. You would never have been able to get to it. In India, it's a great big giant rock, and the two rivers come like that, and it's auspicious to bathe in it. So there's this big chain you can hold on to, and you kind of step into the river, and you hold on for dear life, and you just get yourself swept in that. We were with a group of people. Unfortunately, there was one woman with us. She happened to be an emergency medical technician, but we didn't need that. Her value at this point was that she was 6 feet tall and she was very strong. And so we sent her in with everyone who went into the river because she could hold them better than they could hold the chain. But I remember just standing there. I mean, of course, I loved that place. It's just incredible to see the rivers like that. And I just realized I could just slip into that water. In a matter of minutes, I would be drowned. That would be that. And the river, I mean, it wouldn't even blink. Not for a second would it even notice that I had just ended my incarnation. I was sane enough to realize there would be a lot of consternation on the bank of the river. And when the news got home, there would be a certain kerfuffle that the river wouldn't care, the two rivers, they wouldn't care about it, but others would care about it. But it helped me understand what we're dealing with. You know, God is not pleasurable and easy. The divine power is the power of the universe, the earthquakes, the floods, the fires, the extraordinary self-sacrificing love of a mother for her child. You know, the beautiful romance that people have in their life, the extraordinary elevation of true inspired creativity. These are enormous forces that, and this is what God is. And yes, it is terrifying. And yes, it is, I have to raise my energy to that level. But you see, it's also that same power, bliss, love, peace. That's why the peace that passeth understanding, because the power of it is just makes this world look like a joke. Because this world is just, this is shadow and light. That is reality. Sometimes when people first hear a recording, of Yogananda's voice, of Master's voice. It's a bit shocking when you hear it, because he's not just, you know, blessed Jesus, meek and mild. You know, he thunders. And now we have more recordings. For a time, the only ones we had were the thundering voice. But there is so much power in it. He's telling us, this is what it takes. This is who we must become. And that's why, now I'll come to the word energy. That's why people of divine realization have enormous energy, just unrelenting energy, because that is the manifestation of God. The love that we manifest, you know, as not just from the little human heart, but that we manifest as one of the manifestations of God, is not that just sort of, oh, I love you. It's, you know, I will do everything I can to serve you. I will sacrifice everything to express that love for mankind, that love for my art, that love for my own excellence, whatever it might be. Think of the most powerful, disciplined person that you can imagine. And that's what we're beginning to get into here. That's what true divine love looks like, because power is also part of it. That's why when, for example, when this was now many years ago, but when the Twin Towers were destroyed in that terrible experience of 9/11, and people would, in the quote New Age community, were saying, well, we should just love the terrorists. And Swami Kriyananda, he spoke very strongly to that. Yes, he said, the love is transforming, but it's not love that is just, oh, maybe we should love them. He said, it has to be a power of love that is greater than their call to destruction. I mean, think about the force of destruction that was let loose. The power of love has to be greater than that force. And yes, the divine power can do that. You know, Jesus calmed the storms on the water. Jesus raised the dead, made the blind to see. He also drove the money changers out of the temple. You know, it's not being nice. Nice is not one of the eight manifestations of God. And that's where the word power, though it's where the word power has to be understood, because it is bringing light into this world. And there's a tremendous shadow force that is trying to keep that light from coming. And if that light does not have more power than the shadow will simply obliterate it. And so now I'm going to come back to me and you. You know, I don't have to have a whip and drive the money changers out. That's not being asked of me at the moment. So I take the word power and I put it into the word energy, which is another way of understanding it. But energy is something that I understand. So let's get really practical. Whatever we do, love, peace, joy, has to be done with energy. That's what I was saying. And just the example of, oh, yes, I love you. And, oh, you need something. Well, why don't you get it for yourself? You know, it's like there has to be something put behind it. When you see love expressed, it's put forward. In whether, again, I mean, love can be expressed through music, through art, through painting. But it has to have real power in it, or else it's not that it's not there. It's just doesn't, how do you say? It's just the very embryonic form of the manifestations of God. Everything is a manifestation of God. So in a very practical way, let's just think about energy, about putting out energy, about doing things with commitment and with force. If you look carefully at your own life, and you look carefully at what disturbs your ease and pleasure, it's always because more energy is required. If you think about every fear that you have, every anxiety that you have, virtually always, you will find that the anxiety is over whether or not I will have the energy to meet this. If my house is foreclosed upon, my goodness, that is inherently a huge problem. But the problem is I'm going to have to do something about it. And just sitting in this house and continuing to just have things continue as they are is much easier than figuring out what I'm going to do next. Tremendous amount of energy is required. And the anxiety invariably is because I don't know if I have that energy. Or even sometimes more simply, I don't want to put out that energy. I don't want to have to work harder to get more money. I don't want to have to solve this. But what God is asking of us is that we have to put out more energy. And when we start manifesting energy with the awareness that this is an aspect of God and He will help me if I do it in this way, if God is asking it of me, He will also give it to me. And this, like all the other spiritual principles that I ever talk about, let's practice when it's easier. Because in every situation you face, I face, and I presume your life is at least similar to mine, there's always a way to do it a little better. You know, when I finish washing the dishes and the sink is a little messy, do I just go to bed or do I clean the sink before I go to bed? When I see that the garbage is a little full, do I wrap it up and carry it out to the garbage can? Or do I just say, no, I'll deal with it later? Anything that you do, you can always put out a little more energy. And so I've made it a practice through my life. I do this as best I can. Whenever I see that I'm about to make a lower energy choice, I mean, I'm not talking about huge things. I'll go back to the dishes for some reason. I've noticed this. I have a lot of house guests. Now, some of my house guests are going to hear this, so I don't really want you to take this personally. But this is just an observation. It's always been interesting to me that sometimes people will do all the dishes except the jar, which is sitting on the side, or the pot that is sitting over here. And I mean, sometimes you just don't see it. But the jars, especially, for some reason, I don't know why. And it's just always interesting to me. Like, you know, I don't quiz my guests. We're all friends. But I think, why did you stop just before the jar? You know, what was in your mind that caused you not to finish the jar? And to me, it's not a judgment because I don't care. I'm not a picky housekeeper. I think of it more just from the point of view of energy. What happened just before the jar? Now, conceivably, the crash came long before the jar, and we got all the way to the jar, and that was a lot more energy than we were able to put out. You see, it's not a question of absolutes. It's a question of, compared to myself, what am I doing? And making it a practice, whenever there's an inclination to put out less energy, at least put out a little more. You know, you don't have to suddenly stay up all night and wax the floor. That's not what's being asked of you. But you just put out a little more. Because what we're training is we're training that mindset that says, I can't do it and I don't want to. It's unpleasant to do it. Because that becomes, one thing I've really observed, this came to me when this very early in my life of doing what I'm doing, this woman came to me and she was very upset because of the way her mother had treated her. I mean, now these are not small traumas that people have. This was a big trauma. She was a grown woman. She was a grown woman with her own career, but she was just angry at her mother. And somehow her mother was still living and still in her life, but she was really angry at her mother. And she really wanted me to help her get over the anger to her mother. Now, I mean, she comes in with a boatload of anger at her mother and just kind of puts it in front of me and wants me to help her get out of it. It was very clear that I didn't have the power to dissolve it, and neither did she. So I sort of asked her, I said, oftentimes when something expresses in a big way, it also expresses in lots of small ways. No, she said, I'm not angry about anything except my mother. Oh, I said, really? I didn't know her well, but I suspected this wasn't true. So I just started her asking questions, you know, when your coworkers leave their dirty cups in the sink, when you're on the freeway and someone cuts you off really suddenly, when you realize that you've been holding to get to get tech support for 45 minutes and you've accidentally, shut it off just before it's your turn. Like, do you ever just flash out with a little bit of anger? Well, yes, of course, doesn't everyone? Okay, this is all we're trying to understand. And so what I said to her is, look, you're not going to be able to get rid of this. This is an elephant. And no matter how hard you push on it, it's not going to move. But start nibbling around the edges. Because what you have built up in yourself is you've built an habitual response. And the habitual response to anything that happens to you is you get angry. So as a consequence, anger is the groove. Anger is your psychological groove, your energy groove. I said, you need to fight the battle every place you can win it. When your coworkers leave the cup, say, oh, how wonderful. I'm so glad. They're so helpful to me in so many ways. I will wash their cups. When somebody cuts you off on the freeway, you think, poor man, I hope he doesn't crash. You know, what's motivating him to try to save 10 seconds? Poor fellow. Maybe he fought with his wife. Maybe his son's on drugs. You know, whatever it might be. Find a way not to be angry. And then you break the habit. So with energy, energy is a really simple one to work with. Because almost always, we can put out a little more. Now, I happen to have a very strong physical body, so I can do physical things. I know many people are debilitated in various ways, and you don't have that much energy, but you can always put out a little bit more. And if you don't have it physically, you can put it out mentally, you can put it out in a kind thought, you can put it out in a little extra prayer for somebody who needs help. You can put it out in singing an extra verse of a cheerful song. Just whatever you're looking at, see where you're tending to collapse, push yourself just the tiniest appropriate bit forward. And then what happens is you begin to think of yourself as somebody who can put out a little more energy. And of course, as dynamically and as powerfully as you can train this, this is what you should do. Swami Kriyananda had limitless energy. That's the only way I can describe it. And he worked us very hard. I remember many years later, he commented about, sometimes, Asha, I would see in your eyes an almost desperate fatigue, is how he described it, because I would never give up. But yeah, sometimes it was a little hard to just rouse yourself for one more round. I would go to his house, and I was his secretary, at 4 p.m. You know, sometimes I'd leave at 5, sometimes at 7, sometimes at 9, sometimes at 2 a.m., just depending on what was going. Swami didn't pay a lot of attention to the clock. If the energy was flowing, the energy was flowing. We just followed it through. And he was training us because he had trained his will so powerfully. And, you know, interestingly, on the path of self-realization as brought by Yogananda, his unique contribution to the science of yoga is something called the energization exercises. And if you don't know them, you can learn them from many places, from Ananda or from other Yogananda lineages. Very much worth learning. You use your body to train your mind and to train your will to be able to have energy whenever you need it. Yogananda, Master, used to stand in front of his audiences, and he would pinch his piece of his body, his hand, just a little pinch of between his fingers. There's enough latent energy in a pinch of your flesh to keep the whole city of Chicago in electricity for a week. You know, and we're too tired to go out, walk to the end of the driveway and pick up the mail. It's there. It's right within us, because energy is a manifestation of God, and we are children of God. Of all the things I've told you, if you work just on this, just on putting out a little more energy and training yourself to believe that if it's required, I can do it. If it's asked of me, I can do it. You will find your entire life will change. I mean, now Master said you only have to do 1% of what he taught to be successful in the spiritual path. Now think about that. 1%? That's a very small amount. But Master said everybody's going to choose a different 1%, and that's why I have to teach so much. But if you're just going to choose one manifestation of the 8 manifestations, try energy. Because if you have energy, everything else will follow. Even if your energy is going completely gablooey, at least something is happening. As Swamiji said, I always prefer someone with energy, even if that energy is misdirected, because then we can always redirect it. He said, if there's no energy, he said, there's simply nothing to work with. So give God a chance. Just begin trying to be his energy, and then with grace and attunement, gradually that energy will shift from quantity to quality, but at least you'll start with quantity, and then quality will come. So God bless you, my friends.